Reading from the prophet Ezekiel, we heard about a virtuous person turning from virtue to commit iniquity, and then of the same person turning from the wickedness back to virtue. That turning, another word for that turning is conversion. We can convert away from, we can convert to wickedness, or we can convert to virtue. We do that every day. Every day we're turning or converting to something. In the gospel, Jesus tells the parable of two brothers, two of the same family, right? And the first says to his father, I will not go to work in your vineyard. And then changes his mind and goes. And the second says to his father, I'll go, and then doesn't. And Jesus is speaking this parable to the chief priests and the elders, the big important people. And at the end of the gospel, he charges those very people with failure to change, to turn, to convert, to change their minds and believe. Even in that second reading from St. Paul's letter to the Philippians, we heard the encouragement to work at having the same mind, to think harmoniously, and specifically to have the mind, the same mind as Christ. The readings just kind of seem to be pummeling us over and over again with this theme of turning, of conversion, of changing our mind. What's it mean to change my mind? How do I go about doing that? What do I need to change it from and to, right? Especially in an election year, but you know, throughout the whole year, and especially for you who are attending classes, we're always inundated with people trying to persuade us, to convince us, to teach us, to change our minds from one thing to another. Is the gospel simply one more competing voice trying to compete amid all those other voices to convince us and change us? A couple years ago, I was having a conversation with a friend, and in the course of the conversation, at one point, my friend got a little passionate about the topic that we were discussing and said, I'm right. I know I am. Just that passionately. And at that point, I realized that we were having a monologue and not a dialogue. In that first reading, St. Paul doesn't say, have the mind of Paul. He doesn't say, Paul is right. He says, have the mind of Christ. And then he explains what that means. Have the mind of Christ, who emptied himself, humbling himself, becoming obedient to God, even to the point of death. Why? Why would he do that? Because he loves us. He doesn't stand up and say, I'm right and you're wrong. He lays down on the cross out of love for us and says, will you do this too? My first year as a theology student, I was sent to study in Rome, in Italy, and it was a very rough year for me. There was a lot of adjustment and transition. And every day, I kid you not, every day for an entire year, I would wake up and at some point during the day would shake my head and say, what am I doing an ocean away from home? An ocean away from everyone that I love. And the coursework in Rome is a little different from how it usually is here in the United States. You don't write papers and take tests. You listen to a lecture for the entire semester. You don't even raise your hand to ask questions. I remember a few times an American raising his hand to ask a question, and the professor was dumbfounded. Like, sit down. So you listen to these lectures for the course of a whole semester, and then at the end of the semester, you have a 10-minute oral exam upon which your whole grade is based. So I had this course on grace taught by a professor from Malta, the Maltese professor. And at the end of what had been a very rough semester regardless, then we were all given a number of questions to help us prepare for that 10-minute exam, right? And when it was my turn, I went in, and he didn't ask me any of those questions. He asked me to respond to a scenario. He said, okay, you're ordained, and you're back in your home diocese, and you're pastor of an inner-city parish where there's a lot of drugs and crime and gang activity. What do you do? 10 minutes, go. I had no idea, right? I just started grasping around for whatever I could think of, you know. I remember at one point saying we could buy a building and turn it into a rec center, and they could have, you know, so alternative and fun things to do. And he just kept shaking his head and smiling, but shaking his head. And at one point, he said, you Americans, you're always trying to pull yourselves up by your own bootstraps. And at this point, as you can imagine, I was starting to panic a little. And I have no idea where it came from. I remember taking a deep breath and saying, okay. I would begin by loving them. And immediately he stood up and he shook my hand and he said, thank you, you can go now. I don't remember anything from that course, but I will never forget that exam. He taught me that I can't change you. No matter how brilliant or persuasive or even intimidating I might be to you, I can't change you. But I can love you. And if you truly feel loved, if you truly feel trusted and believed in, then you might find the courage to change yourself. And that is the mind of Christ. That's what makes the gospel different from everyone else competing to convince us. The gospel begins with Christ emptying himself and then dying out of love for us, but all the while leaving us free. Jesus doesn't say, I'm right, and I know I'm right. He says simply, I love you, and I want to be with you. That's the gospel. So here's some homework for the week. That person that you may be trying to convince or change, or beat up with your ideas, have the mind of Christ. And try this whole week simply to empty yourself and simply to love them.